Live from Midtown Tucson, this is Power Talk 1210 Studios presenting Solomon on Blast with Doug Martin and Pastor Fred.
Then wisdom appeared and she told me not to partake of that bread.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Valentine's Day. Welcome back to Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210. If you've listened to the show before, you know our focus is to use the wisdom, knowledge, and understanding of King Solomon to make some sense of this confused and at times downright crazy culture we live in today. And given it's Valentine's Day, I figured I'd use some Valentine's Day statistics to reflect just how confused our culture is. The first one. 14% of women send themselves flowers on Valentine's Day. Now, there is no statistics on whether they're married or single, so it's hard to say what's going on here. Maybe we can get one of you ladies out there that have done this to call in and provide us with a little wisdom and understanding as to why would you do this. 750-7456 if you can respond to that particular statistic. The second one, 53% of women would end their relationship if they didn't get something for Valentine's Day. So I'm guessing this one should only apply to single women. I would hope, anyways, that if they're already married, this wouldn't be enough to be justification for divorce. If it is, I might be in trouble. Just kidding. Oh, by the way, happy Valentine's Day to my beautiful wife, Sandy. I didn't want to forget that. All right, here's another statistic. Average annual Valentine's Day spending, $13.2 billion. And the average consumer spends just over $116 for Valentine's Day's gifts. $13.2 billion, that's a lot of flowers, candies, and cards. Now, how much wisdom is in there? I'm not quite sure. Here's a couple more. Of the flowers bought for Valentine's Day, 73% are bought by men. Of the cards bought for Valentine's Day, 85% are bought by women. I would say there's a statistic there for all those women out there that are so into women's equality that it's time to step up and spend some money and buy us men the flowers. Either that or let us get away with just giving you a card if you really want equality, right? Adjust things there. Fortunately for Solomon, he didn't have to deal with Valentine's Day. Can you imagine what it would have cost him? 700 wives, 300 concubines at an average of, in today's dollars, $116 a person. That's roughly about $116,000 just for Valentine's Day gift for Solomon. Every year, he probably would have never made it to being the wealthiest man in history if he'd had to deal with Valentine's Day at that rate. And honestly, I'm not against Valentine's Day at all. I like those little candy hearts with the different sayings on them. So it's just some statistics to get you up to where the point is. And that point is that if you're relying on Valentine's Day to determine whether or not you should stay with someone or believe them when they say they love you, but don't buy you the right gift, you're probably trusting in the wrong thing. Trust is key, though, to all our relationships, whether they're personal, organizational, national, or even international. Trust is that bond that holds us together, and the level of trust can be determined by the pressures and the challenges the relationship can withstand and still remain intact. The more trust, the greater the challenges that can be withstood. And I think trust is like a bridge that connects the two land masses. The higher the bridge, The higher the troubled waters below that bridge can rise without affecting the bridge and the trust. And because trust is that key measurement between people, either directly or indirectly, it has to be carefully guarded. Without that trust, the bonds that hold our relationships together can be severed and at times impossible to even reconnect. Solomon's wisdom, as always, can help us, especially when it comes to trust. He says in Proverbs 28:6, "He who trusts in his own heart is a fool, but whoever walks wisely will be delivered." How do we walk wisely and get delivered? Well, Proverbs 3:5 answers that one. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on to your own understanding. Such a simple concept, but not always so easy to implement. When we come back from the break, we'll look at the consequences of not trusting in the Lord. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back. Once again with Solomon on Blast. Proverbs 30, 32, and 33, Solomon says, "If you have been foolish in exalting yourself, or if you have devised evil, put your hand on your mouth, for as the churning of milk produces butter and wringing the nose produces blood, so forcing of wrath produces strife." And I would say Brian Williams has been there and is in that position right now when it comes to exalting himself when it might not be quite the truth. So can we really trust him? Latest news article came out of MSN.com, says Brian Williams reporting now question on the Berlin Wall and Navy SEALs. Two more stories he's told over the years have recently come into focus, claims he made of traveling with SEAL Team 6 and being at the Brandenburg Gate on the night of the Berlin Wall was brought down. And it says that after killing of Osama bin Laden in 2011, Williams recounted flying into Baghdad as the Iraq War broke out with the elite Navy unit. Now, people might be, this is his quote from May 3rd, 2011. "Now, people might be hearing about SEAL Team 6, he said on the nightly news directly after bin Laden's death. "I happen to have had the great honor of flying into Baghdad with them at the start of the war." The Huffington Post cited several occasions on which Williams had recounted flying with SEAL Team 6, both on his broadcast and on the late show with David Letterman. He flew into Baghdad invasion plus 3 days on a blackout mission at night with elements of SEAL Team 6. Now, the article goes on to say that SEAL Team 6 doesn't take embedded reporters and that he was actually a few days after that reporting. So it sounds like this is another one of those cases where we can't really trust what Brian Williams is saying. Morning, Fred.
Morning, Doug, Oscar. I think what makes this case so important is that this is what Brian Williams does for a living. There are people who have been caught stretching the truth in other situations, but this is exactly what he does for a living. I mean, the entire credibility of his profession is based on him telling us stuff. And when he is caught in such a major...
lie.
Yeah.
We don't want to...
prevarication.
we can come up with all those euphemisms.
It becomes an issue to anybody that's listening to him. I mean, I think the people that should be most outraged are the people working for NBC News, who are putting everything they do behind this man's character and personality and what he's projecting, you know, over the airwaves.
Right. And if you look at his history, there's still a link off of the NBC website that has a history, a bio of him and all of the accolades he's received over the years with regards to, you know, his ability and his reporting.
Yeah. So that on a surely professional level, this man has violated the people that he works with, probably as much as the American people in general. And I think that if anyone who is leading the case against him, it should be them.
Yeah.
You know, because they want integrity. You assume they want integrity in what they do.
And I think that's where we as...
his field reporters, everybody that, yeah, you know, who's involved with him.
We as individuals look to the news to report the truth. Now, we know there's biases in it nowadays, but there's certain elements of it that you expect to get the truth. There's a quote from Jim Lehrer from... PBS and their news report, he said, and I think it addresses Brian Williams' attitude. Jim Lehrer said a few years back, I am an expert on the news hour, and it isn't how I practice journalism. I am not involved in the story. I serve only as a reporter or someone asking questions. I am not the story. And I think that's the problem with Brian Williams' situation, is that he got to the point where he thought he was the story. So unless something was newsworthy that happened to him, the story wasn't complete because he thought he was the story.
Well, this is where the news meets television, you know, where you are, in effect, dealing with a TV personality. See, a lot of people don't understand the difference between a preacher in a church setting and a preacher on TV. They assume that they're the same thing. But what I tell people all the time is you got to understand something. You're dealing with a TV personality as much as you're dealing with a preacher. Mm-hmm. And so we're assuming, we're calling these people broadcast journalists and whatnot. But at the same time, Doug, these are TV personalities. These guys wear pancake makeup. They get nose jobs. They do what everyone else does on TV. And sometimes we're guilty of people that follow soap operas and assume the doctor on TV is the doctor in real life, you know?
Right.
These are TV people. And sometimes we're shocked to find out that they're actually just that.
That they're really just people that have those same issues.
And that perform really well when the lights and the camera are on them.
Right. And he wouldn't have been getting paid what he was getting paid, $10 million a year, if there wasn't some aspect of ratings involved in that. You get paid based on your ratings in that business. And the better the ratings, the more money he's making.
Now, you probably remember the TV show from the 70s called The Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Yeah.
It was huge. Yeah. It was written by a guy named James L. Brooks, who started his career writing for CBS News. So he, even though that was, a parody with lots of caricatures, he still kind of gave us the character of Ted Baxter. Remember him,
right.
The anchorman,
yeah,
on the local TV station?
Yep.
And the guy was a complete buffoon, and we know that he was a caricature. But later on, in the end of the 80s, he wrote a film called Broadcast News, where it starred another guy named William Hurt. Now, this was much more realistic in the way it was presented. It was a little romantic comedy or whatnot, but it was still the same principle. These guys on television look like the most serious-minded, trustworthy people you'll ever meet, but in real life, they were simply really good actors who
Right.
knew how to make you feel comfortable and make you feel like you were receiving something heartfelt and important. And that's what they do for a living. And I think it's, in a lot of ways, we're just finding that out again. We don't like to find out. We don't like to see behind the curtain. But every once in a while, you do.
Yeah, you look behind it and see that there are things going on that
they're just
aren't as clean and as perfect as you'd like them to be. And the problem is also that lying is significant. When you really consider it from God's point of view, I mean, it ranks up in the top 10, right? Not being a false witness is one of the 10 commandments, but in our culture today, it seems like we've gotten to the point where it's acceptable, at least in a lot of areas. And this was at one area that people didn't really accept it and weren't willing to just let it go by, at least at this point in time.
Well, especially when what you do for a living is called the news.
Right. And,
you know?
And like I say, when we go to the news, our expectations are we're getting the truth. There may be some bias.
Yeah, exactly. But you're getting that there are certain things you're assuming are in place that are respected. I was thinking the difference between America and England, for example. In England and in other parts of Europe, they call a newsreader a presenter, which is really a much better picture of what they are. Mm-hmm. But in the United States, we call them anchor men. Which implies that this
there's a solid rock.
This person
you
that you can
them.
Lean on and trust and make sure that. Right. And so there's a whole mindset that goes with that in America. And these guys carry, I think, is undue pressure. Even on the local television, every single person on the news has to pretend like you're the best. They're the best neighbor you've ever had in your life. You know, they're not just giving you information, but they have to. They're the most community conscious people. They're the ones who really care. They're the ones on your side, etc. But in reality, we all know that's not. They're just folks doing their job, and some do it better than others. But, you know, I think our mentality in this country is very naive about it. A presenter sitting there, hey, I'm just the guy here.
I'm just the messenger.
Right? Yeah, and hopefully you like the way I give this information to you, and you'll come back and watch me again.
And like I say, though, we all work very hard at not calling lies lies, which, you know, misspoke. He embellished it. He misremembered. And when you get right down to it, you need to call it what it is so that the problem gets taken care of. Otherwise, it can continue on. And
yeah, personally, I think Brian Williams is going to have to end up on Inside Edition or something like that.
Yeah, there was a book that Jim Lehrer had written.
Maybe Entertainment Tonight.
Yeah. Or he's going to take Jon Stewart's spot. About 20 years ago, Jim Lehrer wrote his autobiography, and it was called A Bus of My Own. And in there, he wrote about fake reporting. And this is 20 years ago. He says, in there, he kind of gives this exchange where he's interviewing a senator. He says, Senator, you are from a cranberry-growing state. Is that the reason you're in favor of continuing the cranberry subsidy program? Reply, certainly not. I vote only in the national interest. Great answer, Senator. Moving on now to arms control. So he says everybody within an earshot of that kind of exchange, and such exchanges go on every day by thousands, White House, the news, everything. It's a dialogue of lies, but everyone just kind of winks at it, and it's a small business necessary lie is kind of how he related to it. He goes on, but at the end of this particular section, he says, at some point, it would be nice if they actually had a squad that would go out on the McNeil Lehrer NewsHour and every other news program and outlet in the nation and shout, lie, lie, lie. Maybe we just stop this craziness of judging public people, not on what they say, but on the way they say it.
But getting back to the fact that news is married to television, and television is its own medium that could not exist if it didn't lie to you. So, for example, what do you want as an alternative? C-SPAN?
Yeah, it's pretty dry.
Yeah, exactly. So without all of that, you get C-SPAN. Right. So, you know, it's give and take. It's just up to the consumer to know what they're getting, Doug. That's what I think.
I agree. And to realize that these kind of things are going to continue because that's human nature. And as long as they got to exalt themselves, they'll continue to do so. So we'll come back with our next segment, Solomon on Blast, right after this commercial. Well, we're back real quick here with Solomon on Blast. Secret agent men, they're out there. This particular story kind of ties in with the whole Brian Williams thing. Top German editor, CIA is bribing journalists. This one from the Russian Insider, a gentleman that I'm going to have a really hard time pronouncing his name. Anyways, it's too hard. I'm just going to let it go. He was the German editor for one of the major German newspapers in Germany, and he came out with a book. I'll try and pronounce his name. Udo, that's easy. The Ufkolt. He was former editor of one of Germany's largest newspapers and a serious mainstream journalist. He came out leading political talk show a couple of years ago. The book is number 7 on the bestseller list in Germany, called Russian Insider. It's been a long, or here at Russian Insider, he said, it's been a long apparent to us that there's something distinctly odd about German media regarding Russia. And the basis for the book is that he was bribed by the CIA for years to provide stories that were in tune with what the CIA wanted the people over in Europe to hear. He says Operation Mockingbird was one of the operations back in the 50s, a secret CIA operation which recruited journalists to serve as mouthpieces for the American government. It was officially terminated after it was exposed during the church committee investigation, which was in the 60s. But he says evidence of the ongoing influence continues to accumulate. And this gentleman decided he'd come out and write this book and actually report what happened with him as one of the leading journalists with regards to the CIA and what he was reporting. So it's another case of, can you trust what the journalists are reporting? It's hard to say.
Well, it's propaganda. I mean, a good part of the news business is, in fact, propaganda. And, you know, again, I think we in America tend to be very naive about these things because we live under such high idealisms, in, at least in our thinking. And we realize that the rest of the world is out there, has sorted, having to have sorted through these things historically. You know, you go back to Nazi Germany and to the former Soviet Union, and how they used propaganda was everything.
Right.
In controlling those people, controlling those, the, you know, the public in the way they thought and how they wanted them to perceive the world. I hear today, even in North Korea, you know, I think they, maybe it was just a joke, but someone said they're convinced they won the World Cup. You know, it's you know, it's just how it's presented. And I think as the world becomes more of a global community, Doug, that we're just getting some rude awakenings to the way things really are and the way that they have always been. In fact, here in the United States, the White House has fundamentally bullied the press. And this is what you're hearing. President Obama has actually brought in some White House correspondents and literally told them off for the way that they cover him. And, you know, these unofficial settings, which they should be reporting on these. But somewhere they have gained a foothold within their own press, the press corps, to where now, off the record, he can stand over them and, you know, and again, the word is bully them.
Well,
for the way that they're reporting on the White House.
Yeah, in this book, the book Bought Journalist, he said he was taught to lie, to betray, and not tell the truth to the public. And they actually paid him to write the stories, the CIA did. He considered that this particular story hasn't gotten a lot of news play out there in the mainstream media, but when it comes to things like the internet, it does allow for us as individuals to really find this kind of thing, find out that there's truth out there that is opposite of what most people think. I think we have to take a break, right, Oscar? It's, we got to take a quick break here for the news. We'll come back and continue the discussion right after this break. We're back with Solomon on Blast here. We're continuing to talk about this book, Bought Journalist, by the author Udo. And like I said, I'm not going to try and pronounce his name. I think the significant part about this is that the internet has diversified things, right? That's really what we're looking at is it used to be you had those tight-knit news organizations where the news could only come through them.
Right. And I think this is where the shock and the outrage are based, that you're trusting, for example, Walter Cronkite to get everything to you. Remember Archie Bunker said, you know, if it didn't come from Walter Cronkite, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't news. But the idea today is that you don't really have to rely on one source.
Right. And there always is that, well, if it comes from the internet, it must be true. There's that aspect of it that you do have to be careful. And
the irony is people say that mocking the internet news, but when in reality it's the internet that diversified
the news
sources.
Right.
And let's face it, the internet has probably saved the news industry to the degree that people now are probably more interested in the news than ever before. And you can go just about anywhere finding some kind of perspective, that you're no longer required to believe the three alphabet channels.
Right.
You don't have to completely accept what they're saying. You can look around them. And so the great example, again, Doug, is going back to the Bill Clinton and the Lewinsky dress. When all the major sources, Newsweek, spiked the story, nobody would touch it, and Drudge ran a headline.
And now
and the rest is history.
He's like one of the leading news sites out there, and all it is a collection of news stories that exist. It's not like they're reporters in any way.
Basically, you, if you're interested in the news, you can read several different sources, and you can decide on your own which ones to trust.
Yeah. This guy says, he says, we're talking about puppets on a string, journalists who write or say whatever their masters tell them to write or say. If you see how the mainstream media is reporting about the Ukraine conflict, and if you know what's really going on, you get the picture. He says, the masters in the background are pushing for war with Russia, and Western journalists are putting on their helmets. He says, and if you're one of them, and now you're the first in interviewing, they said he was one of those guys originally, but he was the first one to really blow the whistle. He says, I was ashamed I was part of it. Unfortunately, you can't reverse it. Although my superiors at the newspaper approved of what I did, I'm still to blame. He's taken responsibility, which is interesting because I don't think Brian Williams has really taken full, I lied, responsibility. But yes, to my knowledge, I'm the first to accuse myself and prove many others are to blame. So he says, he asked him how he became a bought journalist, and he says, it started right after I started working for the newspaper. I learned to regard luxury invitations as quite acceptable and to write positive articles in return. So money was basically what got him down that road, and he got to travel the United States. They paid for his expenses, put him in contact with Americans. But like we've said, the diversity of the internet is going to cause these kind of things not to be able to stay hidden all the time.
Well, look what happened in America. I mean, every major city newspaper became basically, maybe every's not a good word, but I'd say overwhelmingly the major newspapers in America's cities became an extension of the Democrat Party agenda, who they endorsed in elections, their columns. I mean, the kind of people who work there, they had a common goal, common worldview, and they began to use those platforms just to promote, a certain agenda. And it's very clear. But what's happened to our local newspapers?
They're disappearing.
They're disappearing. If you don't have a bird, you don't need them.
Right. Or a dog.
Or a dog.
Yeah,
you know?
Craigslist wiped out their ad revenue.
I remember living in San Francisco where they were giving away every day, the Chronicle. If you would just buy Sunday, they would give you every other issue. And, not to mention you can go to the internet and read sfgate.com if you want to.
Right.
So, I mean, it's like they're worthless. The problem is on the internet, sfgate.com has to compete with all these other news sources.
Right. There's a lot of competition. He also went on to talk about the fact that the German mainstream journalist is not allowed to report about the book at all. He says, otherwise they'll be sacked. He says, right now they have he has a bestseller that no German journalist is allowed to write or talk about. And he says, what's even more shocking is we have respected journalists who seem to have gone deep sea diving for a long time. It's an interesting situation. I expected and hoped that they would sue me and bring me to court, but they have no idea what to do. And he says, along that same line, he says, the German newspaper announced they'll fire 200 employees because they are losing subscribers very rapidly and in high numbers. But they don't sue me. They know I have evidence on everything. So, interesting story there. We'll come back after this commercial break with another story here on Solomon on Blast. What is truth? All right, we're back here on Solomon on Blast. School's out, according to Alice Cooper. Well, if you never made it into school, maybe this is the alternative for you. Proverbs 32:2-3 says, surely I'm more stupid than any man and do not have the understanding of a man. I neither learned wisdom nor have knowledge of the Holy One. And maybe that's the problem with some of these people. that are out there getting their degrees through the internet with fake diplomas. This particular article, The Business of Fake Diplomas, the article says that with a four-year college degree generally averaging around $80,000, a diploma is the most expensive piece of paper most people ever earn, though it's just a flimsy sliver of dead tree embossed with a stamp and signed by the lords of higher education. It's also a symbol of hard work, blood, sweat, and tears that went into being admitted, unless, of course, you purchase your certificate from one of the dozen websites offering fake diplomas for as little as $400. It seems to be, he says, as one might expect, the business of fake diplomas is shrouded in hazy legality, yet like most shady industries, it flourishes. The Council for Higher Education Accreditation, which regulates the legitimacy of degrees, estimates that 100,000 fake degrees and diplomas are sold every year. And the titan of the companies doing this, phonydiploma.com, which also owns about a dozen other similar domain names. So what are they up to? Well, it seems that they're a diploma mill, effectively. They'll give you pretty much whatever you want from whatever high school, college, graduate school, international certifications for, according to this article, attractively and deceptively low prices. The customer does not get an actual degree. You get a fake one. So is this a trend going on out there in the world today, Fred?
Well, it first reminded me of, when you go to, for example, an amusement park and you have the opportunity to pose in front of the Sports Illustrated cover.
Yeah, with models on either side.
Yeah, with
your,
or the favorite, your favorite team gear, and you get to pretend, you're a baseball player. And, and so you hang that up, and it's kind of a joke. So when I see the picture here of the Harvard diploma, to me that seems like it'd be pretty easy to find out that never happened.
Yeah, I think the results of actually going back to Harvard and finding this stuff out would kind of point out that it's fake. But interestingly enough, on this website also provides other document services, including transcripts, according to this particular article. So not only can you get the degree, you can also get your transcripts printed up by him.
Now, to me, that is a little shadier in terms of, because that's fraud. That's a little different. Having a picture of you as Time Man of the Year is one thing, but actually, writing a whole article and trying to pass it off like you're the guy is quite another thing, I don't know. I would think that someone could be prosecuted for putting forth false transcripts.
And I think they would if they were caught. And I think part of the issue is if you've gone to that extent, how many companies are really going to go further down the line and look to see whether or not they're fake
or
they're real?
But how can false transcripts even be legal?
Well, they're not false. They're basically making a copy of your transcripts that if you can't get the originals in time, according to the article, that's how they respond to it. If you can't get the originals in time, then, they'll provide temporary ones.
You're kind of like the guy at the head shop just selling the rolling papers?
Yeah, exactly. Actually, some people have been busted. It says last year the FBI busted one such operation. The entrepreneur behind the scheme, 48-year-old Connecticut man, had sold $5 million worth in fake degrees from a series of fake schools he'd set up. These were degrees that weren't even from real schools. Reading University, Glendale University, Suffield University, and other ones, all of which were, quote, accredited by a totally made-up body. He faces 20 years in prison. So there can be consequences for this, but phonydiploma.com doesn't seem to face these repercussions. According to their website, what they do is perfectly legal. It says there's nothing illegal about using a fake diploma for novelty purposes. We never use copywritten seals or emblems owned by actual schools, even though our design may look similar. We never forge the original administrator name. We use a selection of in-house names that look like real signatures.
So I have a question for you, Doug. This is the other side of the story. I'll speak from the other side here. So how much of this is kind of an attempt to lash back against the industry of credentialism. And what I mean by that is a lot of the schools today
are diploma mills
themselves.
Exactly.
And they simply are going to charge you $80,000 for that.
Right.
And it's $400 is a lot cheaper than $80,000. Now, granted, all the disciplines and requirements and time and effort, all of that is on the side of the student and everything the student has to do to get that, and that's to their credit. But what I'm talking about is the entire industry of owning the credential over someone's ability to do a job.
Right. And especially like...
And to do it well.
With the internet, why can't you get your own education? There's more information available nowadays than there's ever been. You can educate yourself entirely through the internet. Why do you have to have that education accredited by spending $80,000 to go to school? And if you can get it over the internet, and it gives you just as good of set of credentials, and maybe not the actual credentials, but your ability, your skill set. If it's there, why do you need this piece of paper?
Yeah, exactly. And especially when it comes down to the specifics of doing certain jobs. And we understand that the big thrust toward higher education and getting more Americans, and anybody in a first world country,
right,
you know, exposure to higher education and what that does across the board. But there comes a time where it becomes ineffective in its own right. There's nothing other than they've turned it into a high school diploma now.
Right.
Where people have to start.
Yeah. Now you can't
in a lesser place to get a job.
Right. You know? You can't get a job with only a high school diploma. You've got to have that college degree, according to most people, which just perpetuates the diploma mill. So you got to wonder if maybe these people haven't got a little edge on them.
So in effect, what they're doing is just giving you a cheaper diploma.
Right. Than what you had.
Than what you'd have to pay in a bigger mill. However, it seems to be very illegal still in my mind. I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around how they can do that legally.
You know? Well, they said it's purely for novelty use. And in the article, he says the only conversation with anyone in the company was very brief with a service rep named Chris over live chat. We posed as a skeptical but interested customer. We're a printing service, not necessarily a diploma mill, he assured us. We print novelty documents. So we asked him, so they don't look real? Look and feels realistic, he curtly replied. We use actual parchment diploma paper and top quality printers. We posed our final question. Will I be able to trick my boss with this? The response was, we have no way to guarantee whether our product will meet your needs just before signing off. But we hope you would agree that the potential value far outweighs any risk. So diploma mills and fake diplomas, another thing. Can you trust what you're getting?
Good question. I guess the moral of that story is have a very good lawyer.
Absolutely. Man, one that doesn't just have a fake diploma either. We'll be back after these commercial breaks with our One Greater Than Solomon segment. Okay, we're back with One Greater Than Solomon segment of Solomon on Blast here today. When I started out, I said that, you know, we need to trust in the Lord with all our heart and lean not to our own understanding. And I think this particular story with regards to a One Greater Than Solomon segment really represents that. I'm sure everybody's heard about Kayla Mueller, the young lady that was reported to have been killed this past week over in Syria, that she was an aid worker over there and had just been notified this week. Her family had just been notified and it had been confirmed that the 26-year-old aid worker was killed. Well, I guess earlier in the week, not about probably about 3 or 4 months ago, she had actually written a letter back home to her family regarding her captivity. And I wanted to just kind of walk through a little bit of that letter, and you can see kind of what Chris Tomlin's song was talking about there with the sovereignty of God and trusting in God. She says in her letter, "Everyone, if you are receiving this letter, it means I'm still detained, but my cellmates have been released. I've asked them to contact you and send you this letter. It's hard to know what to say. Please know that I am in a safe location, completely unharmed and healthy. Put on weight, in fact. I've been treated with the utmost respect and kindness. I want to write you all a well-thought-out letter, but I didn't know if my cellmates would be leaving in the coming days or the coming months, restricting my time, but primarily I could only but write a letter, the letter a paragraph at a time. Just the thought of you all sends me into a fit of tears. If you could say I have suffered at all throughout this whole experience, it's only in knowing how much suffering I've put you all through. I will never ask you to forgive me, as I do not deserve forgiveness. I remember Mom always telling me that all in the end, the only one you really have is God. I have come to a place and experience where, in every sense of the word, I have surrendered myself to our Creator, because literally there was no one else. And by God and by your prayers, I have felt tenderly cradled in free fall. I have been shown in darkness light, and have learned that even in prison, one can be free. I am grateful. I have come to see that there is good in every situation. Sometimes we just have to look for it. I pray each and every day that if nothing else, you have felt a certain closeness and surrender to God as well, and have formed a bond of love and support amongst one another. I miss you all as if it has been a decade of forced separation. I have had many a long hour to think of all the things I will do. When I return, I have many hours to think how only in your absence have I finally, at 25 years old, come to realize your place in my life. The gift that is each one of you, and the person I could and could not be if you were not part of my life, my family, my support." She says, "I do not want the negotiations for my release to be your duty. If there is any other option, take it, even if it takes more time. This should never become your burden. I've asked these women to support you. Please seek their advice. If you have not done so already, you can contact them. None of us could have known it would be this long, but I know I am also fighting from my side in the ways I am able, and I have a lot of fight left in me. I'm not breaking down. I will not give in, no matter how long it takes. I wrote a song some months ago that says, 'The part of me that pains the most also gets me out of bed. Without your hope, there would be nothing left.'" She goes on and finishes and says, "Please be patient. Give God your pain to God. I know you would want me to remain strong. That is exactly what I am doing. Do not fear for me. Continue to pray, as will I. And by God's will, we will see each other soon." From Kayla Mueller. So as we've heard this past week, she died, according to the officials in Syria, the people that were holding her, she died due to that Jordanian bombing of Syria after the Jordanian pilot had been burned to death and ISIS had released that video. But I think when you look at this young lady's life and the ability to trust in God in spite of everything that she's going through, it puts the rest of the world in perspective for how we can see things and how we should be able to adjust our thinking to see things from a better perspective. So, like I said at the beginning, we need to trust in God. We need to put all of our trust in Him, just as Kayla Mueller has done. So until next week, keep thinking wisely, keep trusting in God, and we'll be back with Solomon on Blast next week. Coming up next, Jake Weinberg Show. Yes, he will be coming up next. He's in the house. Jake is in the house. Think wisely. Until next week.